So we have been doing about the snowball effect. So if you've missed some of those, it's kind of talking about the fact that sometimes something starts small and then it snowballs. And Joe kind of read the quote about what the snowball effect is on when she did her introduction to the series. And she said it's something that builds upon itself. So we've been looking at things like discouragement and different topics like that, where things just build upon themselves. And actually, they can start off small in our hearts and minds. But as they increase, they can actually knock us down and they can challenge what we're doing and knock us off course with God. And so this morning, Joe thought, I don't want to preach on this one, so she'll give it me. That is what happened. That's no lie, right? She thought, because this morning we're talking about offence, right? And I think Jo thought, we'll just stick Liz up there because she won't offend anyone. So, or maybe she thought Liz could offend them and that's fine. Because what I can do is offend you all and then I can read you some Bible verses and say, sorry, you can't be offended. My lad said, is that okay? I'm going to do that, right? So, yeah. So it's all good. But I don't know about you, I feel like we live in a culture that is more easily offended than ever before. I don't know if you've noticed that going around. We talk a lot about freedom of speech and that's a big thing at the moment. And then with more freedom of speech, people are saying, no, you can't say that, that's offensive. And it's kind of, it's odd, isn't it? It's this kind of, I don't know what you call that. It's like two different things going on at the same time. And so these are some strange examples of people getting offended. And I don't know if this is people getting offended or just everyone trying to be too politically correct. But there you go. There's a Hartford recruitment agency boss writing a letter. So they write these little adverts to try and get people in for a job. Yeah, so you would have all kind of seen them. And she wrote something to the kind of effect of, we were looking for someone who is hardworking and reliable to come and work at our company. Nothing wrong with that, right? But so she sent this advert off, and lo and behold, she got told to take it down because it could be offensive to unreliable people. And so she was shocked when she had to take that away. If you're unreliable, you could be very offended by that. So don't put it on there. That's a bit ridiculous to me. So it's a bit crazy, isn't it? One school actually banned superheroes from their school because they solve their problems with violence. So we're having none of that here. So anything like Neil would struggle with this. You get out, Neil. Every week he comes. Yeah. Sucking up princess. It's all right. You'd be taking my son with you because Jesse's always in superhero gear as well. So yeah, they thought it was a bit offensive because they solve things with violence. Not very good. Another school, because we know people are a bit touchy on Christian things. Sometimes they don't offend anybody by telling them we're a Christian. And so they changed the word Easter egg, because it has Easter in it, to spring spears. That's just not going to catch on, is it? Like, no kid's going to be saying, look at my spring sphere I'm going to eat. Like, that's just, it's not going to happen, is it? They're Easter eggs. Come on, people. And European Parliament, this is a true thing. So this probably, I can see this probably happening in Europe. They've introduced proposals to outlaw titles according to marriage. So Mr. and Mrs. or Mademoiselle, whatever it might be in French. So they're thinking about dropping married titles because it might be offensive to somebody who's not married or married, I don't know, or maybe divorced or something like that. So we're in a very kind of touchy culture, aren't we, about things like that. Evidently also you're not allowed to say manhole anymore. Only it's a utility cover, utility hole. Yeah. Now, I don't know if that's because men were offended because it's like to the sewer or something like that. So they were like, why is it called a manhole? Or if it's because women felt left out. Like, why is it called a manhole? I want to be, why is it not a woman hole? I don't know. So utility cover if you ever want the politically correct term for that. So that was just a little light in the mood at the beginning before I offend you all. Okay. So just remember that. If you start feeling offended, just go back in your mind to the spring spheres and that will help you. Okay. So as you do, I looked up what offence is in the dictionary, because that's how you start a preach. So it said in the, obviously Google, I didn't actually get out of dictionary because who does that anymore? You just type it into Google, don't you? So it says annoyance or resentment brought about by a perceived insult or disregard for oneself. And what I loved about that kind of definition was the word perceived. perceived insult. So what I'm talking about today, I'm not really talking about when people come up to you and deliberately try to offend you and deliberately say something to knock you off course. I'm talking about sometimes when we perceive offense, when we take offense, when actually it's probably not really there. We read too much into something that's maybe not intended, because I think the majority of the time, that's when we take offense. That's normally what's happened. The majority of the time, people haven't intended offense, but we take offense. And so that's kind of what I want to talk about this morning. So if you maybe got people coming to you and really trying to offend you, maybe you deal with that in a different way. But today I'm talking about how we perceive ourselves, how we perceive what others are thinking of us. And that's kind of what I'm dealing with this morning. So a couple of things about offense, first of all. So offense is, first of all, destructive. Offense is a destructive thing. The other day I went to the bank to drop off, to pay in some church money. So I stood in the queue and there was a lady next to me on this side. There was only like two, cashiers, free. And she was standing there and she said, "Oh, I'm a church trustee and I want to talk to somebody." So my ears kind of just pricked up a little bit because I thought, I'm here paying some church money as a church trustee. But then she said something and she started to get like a little bit angry and a little bit edgy. And she said, "You know, we've got this project, we're running a church and all this kind of stuff." It was like one of them where it's a building project. I think it was an old church that maybe doesn't get used more. And she started to say about the fact that they wanted to change the account and they had to take some signatures off the accounts, which for some of us who have been doing that, it's not actually quite an easy job as you might think. You have to kind of all get together and stuff like that. And she was like, "If I have to be in the same room as them, I am not doing it. We have fallen out big time. I will not even sit in the room with that person." And she was getting like angrier and angrier. And like all the managers were coming across to try and help deal with her. And meanwhile, I'm stood there and the woman is counting quite a lot of pennies for me, you know, going into the bank. So I'm just stood there and there is a queue getting longer and longer down the cash. And she's getting like more angry. Say, "I would do anything. Send me stuff to sign, but I will not sit in a room with them." And I thought, wow, what a bad witness for Christians that this lady is here and saying about this church and she's fallen out. And I don't know the background of what her story was. I don't know how it started, but my guess would probably be that it started small. If they were working on a project together quite happily for a while, my guess is that it started as something little and began to snowball and somebody caused somebody offense somewhere and it didn't get dealt with properly and it got bigger and bigger to the point where they couldn't even work together anymore. Not even work. They couldn't even just deal with a bit of business together in the same room. How bad is that? How sad is that? That sometimes that's how offense can be, that things can snowball to the point where it can actually completely break down relationships. Never mind this project that they were working on together. Their relationship was completely broken down by whatever had happened. So it is a destructive force. It's also, a second thing is it's a distraction. So this woman, no more, she wasn't any longer focused on what they could do with this building project, whatever it was that had been going on. I don't know the ins and outs of it, but she was then entirely focused on this dispute, this fallout that we're having. And how often can that happen to us when actually God has called us to build his kingdom together and to create something brilliant, and instead we end up having little squabbles with each other and getting offended with each other, and it distracts us from the purpose that we're here for. And we kind of miss the point. And you know, the devil loves that. The devil loves it when that happens. I was reading some of Jo's notes that she had written on another sermon she gave me to have a little look at. And one of the things that it said in those notes was that offense is like Satan's bait. Okay, I'll explain that a little bit more. Okay, so we had a mouse when we were, it was a mouse, wasn't it? In one of our old house, or a rat or something, in Brackenbury Road when we used to live there. And it was, we found its droppings around the place and things like that. So we knew it was there, but we hadn't seen it yet. And so what we had to do is like buy, I don't know about you humane people, you buy a trap and then let it go somewhere. But no, we got one that kills. Because apparently they can come back, can't they? So we got this little trap. It was quite horrible, to be honest. You had to turn it and you put some bait in and then it like snaps. So it wasn't pleasant, but we had to look what kind of bait that the mouse would like. And believe it or not, mice like raisins. So I don't know if you knew that. I would have put some cheese in it. Apparently not so keen on cheese. They actually like to eat raisins. So we put this bait in and we set the trap, and lo and behold, in one night, came downstairs in the morning and the trap had shut. So you couldn't see, but there's a little bit of fur sticking out. So that wasn't very nice. So we had to like go and put that in the bin. But that was, the problem was solved then. The mouse was no more and there wasn't any others. So that was good. But we had to find the right bait. if we hadn't had the right bait on, if I'd have gone and put a bit of cheese on, we might have not found it or whatever we think it might have liked. But the devil's very clever. He knows what to bait us with. Some of us, he knows that if he shoves something really big at us, then we'll go, no, I'm not falling for that, devil, and we'll walk away and it's okay. But dangle something little sometimes and we'll take it, and it'll get bigger and bigger and bigger until actually before we know it, we've been completely distracted from what we were meant to be doing. Distracted by a squabble. Sometimes even, I've been in church work quite a long time, and I've known quite a few people leave out of what started as a minor offence that just hasn't been dealt with properly. And I just think that's so sad. And that actually we can, if we're maturing as Christians, we can learn how to deal with these things before they become big things that can distract us or even end up making us leave. And finally, offence is something we take. We choose to take it. So I've already kind of said, actually, offence is often unintentionally. We can choose to take it or not take it. So sometimes we kind of like look at things that might offend us. So I kind of thought of some examples. So perhaps it's something like somebody's looked at you the wrong way. Have you ever had that? I've had times when I've had two friends and one of them said to me, oh, you know, that person, like I've known them both and I was friends with them both, and they're across the other side of the room and said, they were really giving me evil looks, all the way through that. And then I've had the other person come up to me later and go, you know, your friend, they were giving me evil looks all the way through that. And they've maybe just caught each other's eye and just thought, like, they were looking at each other and then just kept, like, looking, like, and like they were, like, falling out. I don't know. Like, I've got the kind of face, like, sometimes when I'm lost in thought, I don't know what I'm doing with my face, right? So sometimes, you know, you're thinking about something, you're like, you're really, like, making a face about it, or, like, when you're angry, and they're like, Liz, what are you doing? Oh, I'm just thinking about something. And sometimes, like, I look at people, and I don't even mean to look at them, I've, like, looked through, you know, have you ever done that? And they're like, Liz, why are you staring at me? And I'm like, I'm sorry, I didn't even realise. And that happens, doesn't it? It can be something as silly as that. It might be something like people are choosing, something you really wanted to be chosen for it, and you got left out, or you didn't get invited to something that you wished you were invited to. It could be loads of different things like that we can get offended about. But we just need to learn how to deal with it in a right way. The Bible says in John 10, verse 10, that the thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy. And but that God comes to give us life and life in fullness. And so the devil loves it when we get distracted with all those kind of little niggles that get us in life. So I want to do something. So I want to look at two characters in the Bible. They're totally not near each other. All ones in the Old Testament, ones in the New, but they had a very different attitude when it came to offence. So the first person we're going to look at kind of got very offended, and the second one we're going to look at kind of the good side. So the first one's a guy called Naaman, and you can read about him in 2 Kings and chapter 5. So I don't know if you're familiar with this story or not, but I'll read the passage out to you. So I'm going to just read from 1 to 7. It's not a very long story. So it says, now Naaman was commander of the army of the king of Aram. He was a great man in the sight of his master and highly regarded, because through him the Lord had given victory to Aram. He was a valiant soldier, but he had leprosy. Now bands of raiders from Aram had gone out and had taken captive a young girl from Israel, and she served Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, if only my master would see the prophet who is in Samaria, she would cure him of this leprosy. Naaman went to his master and told him what the girl from Israel had said. By all means go, the king of Aram replied. I will send a letter to the king of Israel. So Naaman left, taking with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 sets of clothing. The letter that he took to the king of Israel read, with this letter I am sending my servant Naaman so you may cure him of his leprosy. So you may cure him. As soon as the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his robes and said, am I God? Can I kill and bring back to life? Does this fellow send someone to me to be cured of leprosy? See how he's trying to pick a quarrel with me. When Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel tore his robes, he sent him this message. Why have you torn your robes? Make the man come to me and he will know that there is a prophet in Israel. So Naaman went with his horses and chariots and stopped at the door of Elisha's house. Elisha sent a messenger to say to him, go wash yourself 7 times in the Jordan and your flesh will be restored and you will be cleansed. But Naaman went away angry and said, I thought he would surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God, wave his hand over the spot and cure me of my leprosy. Are not Abram, I don't know how to pronounce him, Prophra, anyone can correct me later. the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel. Couldn't I wash in them and be cleansed? So he turned away and went off in a rage. Naaman's servant went to him and said, my father, if the prophet told you to do some great thing, would you not have done it? How much more then when he tells you, wash and be cleansed? So he went down, dipped himself in the Jordan 7 times as the man of God had told him, and his flesh was restored, and he became clean like that of a young boy. So sorry, that was to verse 14. So 1 to 14. So in that story then, we have a guy who's kind of really important. He's highly regarded. He's a commander of an army. He's been an amazing warrior, and everything he's kind of done is successful, and he's used to being praised. He's used to being admired. He's used to being honored. And then he gets leprosy, and there's nothing that his money and his power can do about it. He's stuck with it. And so he goes, what can I do? And this little servant girl from Israel says, well, I know a prophet. Why don't you go and see him? And so he comes in all his grandeur, and he comes with his gifts, and comes expecting a grand entrance, and comes with a letter from the king, you know, just to show who he is. Like, I've come from, you know, the king respects me. That's who I am. And so he comes, and he's very prideful. And my first thing I want to say about just Naaman's kind of attitude and about offense is that actually offense often stems from pride. And so he was there. He expected more. And the reason he went off in a rage is because he was so used to being honored. He was angry because Elisha wouldn't even come out and meet him. He was like, you're not that important for me to bother with. Whether God had told him to do that because he needed to learn a lesson, I'm not sure. But he sent him off and said, yeah, just go wash yourself in the river. You'll be healed. And he's like, he didn't even come out and meet me. How dare he? And he was so prideful that he didn't actually realize, he failed to see something really important about himself. And that was that he was going begging a favor. No matter how grand he was, no matter how important in other people's eyes he was going and he needed Elisha. There was nothing he could do for himself. He was going and he was completely at God's mercy. He was completely at Elisha's mercy. And you know what? I think we do well sometimes to remember that actually that's what happens with us. You know, no matter how we think we're perceived in other people's eyes, no matter how good or bad you think people think about you, we all come to God in the same sorry state. We all come to God full of sin. We all come to God with this disease called sin that we can't cure, that we can't do anything about, that we completely 100% rely on Jesus to take away. And you know, sometimes when we come with pride and we're thinking about what other people think about us all the time, we forget to look at God and to go, actually, God, you know, there's nothing I could do for myself here. We're all in the same boat, guys. We're all on the same team. We're all struggling with this same disease called sin. And sometimes when we remember that, it's like a bit harder to be offended when we remember that we're all on a level playing field here, that we all come to God and we're all beggars because we all need his mercy in the same way. So the second thing about Naaman, so the first thing was that he was prideful, and that's what caused the offense. And then the second thing was that offense nearly prevented his obedience to God. So if it wasn't for the people around him, thankfully our people around him weren't, come on, Naaman. Like, if he'd asked you to do something brilliant and mighty, you would have done it because it would have made you look good. But all he's asked you to do is dip in a river. Just do it. And so he did in the end do it, but he nearly didn't. He nearly missed out on the obedience to God. And sometimes that offense can blind us and can get so in our hearts and minds that we miss actually the fact that God's asking us to do something and we're no longer obedient to it. So whether it's just that it's just infected our hearts and we can't hear his voice, it might be that. It might be that God's asking you to work with somebody that you've been offended by and that relationship needs rebuilding. So it might be different reasons of why we might disobey, but offense can cause disobedience if we're not careful. And here's this is maybe a hard one to hear as well, but offense could sometimes be a bit of a cloak it could be a bit of a cloak to hide conviction. So we feel convicted because God has kind of challenged us with something, and instead of taking that challenge from God, we get offended. We've seen that before. So whether that's by a preach, whether that's something, maybe somebody's rightfully challenged us or brought some criticism in a right way, and we've gone away offended. But actually, we're not really offended at them. We're fighting against God. And that's maybe something hard to think about, because sometimes they can get muddled up in our own hearts and minds and we don't even realize why we've responded that. But I want to encourage you, if you've been really offended by something maybe somebody said in a preach or something somebody's done in a right way, maybe just check your heart. Maybe just ask God. So, God, is that you challenging me? Because if it is, actually, I need to be big enough to kind of confess and take what you're saying to me. Because sometimes we can use offense to mask that kind of thing that we're actually resisting God. And then the third thing about Naaman is that his offense nearly prevented his miracle. And that would have been a really sad thing if he'd have gone all the way and spoke to the prophet and gone in and then just walked away and not got his miracle. Because the miracle was there for him. And I wonder how many times people have missed out on their miracle because God's got something right there for them. And then they walk away because of offense. And I think the devil just is laughing at us sometimes when we let those little things build up and build up. And then God's got this amazing thing and we just walk away. We walk away from church. Sometimes we walk away from God. And it's just because, we've been offended. And it might have been a person in the church that's offended us. They might have genuinely acted wrongly. It might have been a leader that we're offended by. But I want to encourage us today to deal with it in the right way. And at the end, I'll just go through the biblical way of dealing with offense. But I want to look at another character in the Bible who was completely different to that. And he's John the Baptist. And so we're going to just look, first of all, you thought I was going to say John in the book of John, but we're going to just look in Mark first about John the Baptist and what he was like. So it says in Mark 1, starting at 26, so John's disciples came to him. Rabbi, the man you met on the other side of the Jordan River, the one you identified as Messiah, so that's Jesus, is also baptizing people and everybody is going to him instead of coming to us. So you kind of see what's going on here. The disciples are coming and they're like wanting or thinking that John's going to be offended. Because sometimes we can get into this a little bit, can't we? Instead of building God's kingdom, we're building our own little thing. And hang on a minute, why are people going over there to them instead of me? We get like a little bit insecure. So they're probably expecting John to go, right, let's make a plan of action and get these people back into my team John for baptizing then so I can get a few more people over there. I think that's kind of what they're wanting when they come to John, but they don't get that reaction at all. So John replied, no one can receive anyone unless God gives it from heaven. You yourself know how plainly I told you I'm not the Messiah. I'm only here to prepare the way for him. It is the bridegroom who marries the bride, and the bridegroom's friend is simply glad to stand with him and hear his vows. Therefore, I am filled with joy at his success. And then this is the key verse in verse 30. He said, he must become greater and greater. I must become less and less. So I kind of love John's attitude here. So I want to just say a couple of things about John's attitude compared to Naaman's attitude. So Naaman was full of like pride. He came expecting this grand entrance, but John was the opposite. He was so humble. And do you know, it's actually quite hard to be offended when you're really humble. I don't know if you kind of realize that, but he says something else, does John, which is pretty amazing. A little bit later on in Mark, it says, after me comes the one more powerful than I, the straps of whose sandals I am not worthy to stoop down and untie. I baptize you with water, but he will baptize you with the Holy Spirit. So just to give you a little bit of background on that, the whole sandal thing. So people walked around, it was really hot, they walked around in sandals, and we don't get to do that much here, do we? A few days in summer, and it's really nice, and then the big shoes come back on, but it's hot there, and the feet are like getting sweaty all day, and it's dusty, so the feet are really dirty. So in their house, people would have generally have servants, and there was different types of servants. So they held the Jewish servants were slightly higher than the other servants. So Jewish servants would do most things, but they wouldn't untie the sandals because that was considered too low for a Jewish servant. That was done by a different kind of servant. So it was a job that even a servant, a Jewish servant, it was beneath them to do it. And John there says, it would be an honor for me to do the lowest job. It would be an honor for me to do that for Jesus. I'm not even worthy to touch his feet. I'm not even worthy to untie his sandals. His attitude was so the opposite of competing with Jesus. He was just like, yeah, actually, he just needs to be greater and I just need to be less. And that's going to make me happy because I'm just not even worthy to do the lowest job for him. How amazing was John's attitude there. You know, none of us are too good to do something for someone else. It says in Galatians 6:2, share each other's burdens. And in this way, obey the law of Christ. If you think you are too important to help someone, you're only fooling yourself. You're not that important. I love how blunt that passage is. If you think you're too important to help someone, you're only fooling yourself. You're not that important. Now, I don't think that any of us would go around in this church. You know, I know you all, and I know most of you, and I've never heard any of us going around going, nah, I'm too important for that. I don't want to do that job. Like, it would probably look a bit silly if we said that, wouldn't we? I think someone would probably give us a slap, maybe. I don't know, but... if you think you're too important, but sometimes, although we wouldn't ever say that, and although most of the time we wouldn't feel that, sometimes our attitude may say that. And I can think of times myself, so I'm not just kind of saying this is a challenge to me as well, but I can think of times for myself where people have asked me to do things, and like deep down, I'm a little bit like, I can't believe they've asked me to do that. You know, like, I've got the time to do that. Oh, why are they asking me to do that? We can get like this little bit of attitude, can't we, about it, about helping other people. Or it's someone that we don't think we should have to help people about. I want to encourage you. In James, it says, let your yes be yes and your no be no. If you can't help someone, if you haven't got time, if you haven't got resources, sorry, I can't help you do that. It doesn't mean you have to say yes to everything, but our attitude always needs to be right. We never want to feel like we're too important to help someone. And sometimes that attitude can kind of evolve a bit without us even knowing. And it's good for us just to remember that verse and remember John's attitude. Actually, we're all here. We're all not even, you know, worthy to do the lowest job for Jesus, untie your sandals. But Jesus tells us that we should do those things for other people and that we should follow his example. A second thing about John is that he did not care what people thought about him. So we talked about this a little bit. We touched on this on Friday night in youth. So we talked about John the Baptist. Is John gone out? No, he's still there. We got John out because John the Baptist, it says in the Bible that he dressed in camel hair and he ate locusts, right? He was not the coolest guy in the world. That's basically what the translation of that Bible verse was saying. Like, people were like, John, why are you dressed like that? Why have you got locusts in your teeth? Do you know what I mean? Like, what's going on with that, right? And so we got John out to the front and we dressed him up. We tried to uncool him. And some of his children were very delighting in that. And he had lots of different clothes on. So if you want to, one of you took pictures. Was it you, Abby? If any of you want to see pictures of John at the end, Abby's the person to go to. Because I didn't embarrass you enough Friday, John. So I thought I'd embarrass you a bit more, yeah? Yeah. Okay, so we got him dressed because he wasn't called John the Baptist, right? He didn't care. Didn't care what anyone thought. I wonder if none of us cared what anybody thought of us, I think, again, it would be quite hard to be offended, wouldn't it? Offense often comes from how we're perceived by others and how people are perceiving us to others. And I don't think John really gave a jot, to be honest. He wore weird clothes. And when it came to the Pharisees coming to him, he sounds very much like Jesus. If you've read some of the Gospels, how Jesus talks to the Pharisees, John starts talking to them and he calls them a brood of vipers or whatever it was, which is some of the quotes like what Jesus says. And he just didn't care because the Pharisees, they were like the in crowd. They told people who was doing it right and who was doing it wrong, and everyone came to listen to them, and they thought they were it. They were, a lot of the time, they were full of pride and kind of putting others down, but they were the ones to impress. John didn't care. Yeah. He didn't care what they thought. He just told it how it was, and he was who he was. He had a calling from God, and he was who he was. And I think sometimes if we put down our desire to be perceived in a certain way and started instead concentrating on who God thinks we are, I think we'd be a little bit less easily offended as a kind of a culture. And then the last thing about John, he knew his place. So people kept coming up to him and saying, are you the Messiah? Are you it? Because he was getting a bit of a name for himself. And at no time did John kind of let people think he was the Messiah. So he wouldn't have even kind of had to go, yeah, I'm the Messiah. He could have just, you know, let some people think that maybe. But no, he was really clear, like, no, that's not me. I'm just the guy baptized in water. There's somebody else. He never took that title. He never took that thing. He knew what his role was. His role had been prophesied in the Bible. He had a really important role, actually. But he could have been tempted to take the higher role, but he didn't. He knew who he was in God. He was so secure in his identity and who he was and in what God had called him to do. And he ended up, he obeyed right to the end. He ended up dying, actually, in the end, partly because of his faith in Jesus. And he so believed in Jesus. And I think sometimes it must have been hard because Jesus was his cousin. Must be hard to believe in somebody that you've grown up with and that you know so well. But he was just all about giving the praise to Jesus. He knew exactly who he was. And I just want to say to you today, if you're the kind of person, we all get, we all get affected by offense in some way. There's probably none of us in this room who've never been offended by somebody. But some of us, we may be more easily offended than others. But I want to say if that's you, and if you're the kind of person, you maybe think, yeah, actually, I do feel offended quite easily. But maybe actually it's to do with your whole security. And maybe actually if you really find out who you are in God, it won't matter so much to you anymore. Because actually he loves you. He has got the most amazing purpose for you that fits with who you are and what you're about. And if we really dig into that, then actually he becomes greater and we become less. And the people, what people perceive about us matters less and less to us. So what should we do then if we're offended by somebody? I'm not saying this so that we can go around and try and offend people and that's all right. Okay, that's not what I'm saying this morning, that we can kind of go and just offend people on purpose. But if we are offended, what should we do about it? The Bible's quite clear, actually. It gives a really clear step of what we should do. It says, first, go to the person. Right? A lot of us get that wrong, don't we? Like, let's be honest. How many times do we go to the person first and talk to them? Like, most of the time, you've talked to two or three others beforehand, haven't you? And I'm as guilty as anybody on that. And you kind of go and say to somebody, oh, yeah, this person really offended. And you tell this other person, actually, go to them. Because sometimes you feel silly because you talk to someone and go, they really offended me. And then you go and deal with them and they explain it and you go, oh, right. Oh, okay. And then you've already told a few people your version of events. That happens, doesn't it? So firstly, talk to them. And I think probably 90% of the time, 95% of the time, you will probably be able to sort that out with them there and there. You'll probably be able to iron it out. They'll probably apologize and it will probably all be sorted if we did that straight away. And then it says, if that doesn't work, you can ask a leader to help you get somebody else involved to help you sort it out. But the main thing is, yeah, talk to them first. Try and sort it out with them. And that's a better way of dealing with it. We need to remember that we're all human, okay? And that's easy to forget. But it says in Colossians 3:13, make allowances for each other's faults and forgive anyone who offends you. Remember, the Lord forgave you, so you must forgive others. And I just think that's a great verse because it says make allowances for each other's faults. It doesn't say make allowances if there's somebody with faults. If you come across somebody who has some faults, make allowances for them. It says make allowances for each other's faults. That's assuming that we all have faults. Yeah, you with me? Yeah, because we all have faults. And that's whether you're a church member, whether you're a department head, whether you're the pastor, right? I'm allowed to say this, Jo has faults. There we go. You might be offended by her. Do you know what? She's human. Math's human. James is human. We make mistakes. You know, make allowances for the fact that we're human and we make mistakes. And I've heard people leave church because some, you know, maybe the pastor or somebody else hasn't said hello to them that morning. Man, do you know, sometimes it's hard to look out and see everything. And often it's just an overlooking. It's not deliberate. So just remember, people are human. And if you're feeling insecure, if you're feeling left out, talk to somebody. Talk to somebody about it. Don't let it rob you of what God has for you. Because that's so sad when that happens. So deal with the offense. Remember that we're human. And watch your heart as well. So we're talking all about the fact that it's a snowball effect. Just watch your heart. If you're feeling insecure, if you're feeling anxious, if you're feeling angry at somebody, then just all I can say is just deal with it as fast as you can. Just pray about it. Ask God what to do. And just try and think about the best way that you can deal with that quickly. Because the longer you leave it to snowball in your heart, the worse something that starts off really small can actually come and rob you of something that God has for you.